Chapter 141. In which Mrs. Harris, assisted by a teapot, is the cause of a division between friends. Mrs. Gamp's apartment in Kingsgate Street, High Holborn, wore, metaphorically speaking, a robe of state. It was swept and garnished for the reception of a visitor. That visitor was Betsy Prigg, Mrs. Prigg, of Bartlemy's, or as some said Bartlemy's, or as some said Bartlemy's. For by all these endearing and familiar appellations, at the Hospital of St. Bartholomew, become a household word among the sisterhood which Betsy Prigg adorned. Mrs. Gamp's apartment was not a spacious one, but, to a contented mind, a closet is a palace, and the first floor front at Mr. Sweetlepipe's may have been, in the imagination of Mrs. Gamp, a stately pile. If it were not exactly that, to restless intellects, it at least comprised as much accommodation as any person, not sanguine to insanity, could have looked for in a room of its dimensions. For only keep the bedstead always in your mind, and you were safe. That was the grand secret. Remembering the bedstead, you might even stoop to look under the little round table for anything you had dropped, without hurting yourself much against the chest of drawers, or qualifying as a patient of St. Bartholomew, by falling into the fire. Visitors were much assisted in their cautious efforts to preserve an unflagging recollection of this piece of furniture, by its size, which was great. It was not a turn-up bedstead, nor yet a French bedstead, nor yet a four-post bedstead, but what is poetically called a tent, the sacking whereof was low and bulgy, insomuch that Mrs. Gamp's box would not go under it, but stopped halfway, in a manner which, while it did violence to the reason, likewise endangered the legs of a stranger. The frame too, which would have supported the canopy and hangings, if there had been any, was ornamented with divers pippins carved in timber, which on the slightest provocation, and frequently on none at all, came tumbling down, harassing the peaceful guest with inexplicable terrors. The bed itself was decorated with a patchwork quilt of great antiquity, and at the upper end, upon the side nearest to the door, hung a scanty curtain of blue check, which prevented the zephyrs, that were abroad in Kingsgate Street, from visiting Mrs. Gamp's head too roughly. Some rusty gowns and other articles of that lady's wardrobe depended from the posts, and these had so adapted themselves by long usage to her figure, that more than one impatient husband coming in precipitately, at about the time of twilight, had been for an instant stricken dumb by the supposed discovery that Mrs. Gamp had hanged herself. One gentleman, coming on the usual hasty errand, had said indeed, that they looked like guardian angels watching of her in her sleep. Apostrophe but that, as Mrs. Gamp said, was his first apostrophe, and he never repeated the sentiment, though he often repeated his visit. The chairs in Mrs. Gamp's apartment were extremely large and broad-backed, which was more than a sufficient reason for there being but two in number. They were both elbow chairs, of ancient mahogany, and were chiefly valuable for the slippery nature of their seats, which had been originally horsehair, but were now covered with a shiny substance of a bluish tint, from which the visitor began to slide away with a dismayed countenance, immediately after sitting down. What Mrs. Gamp wanted in chairs she made up in bandboxes, of which she had a great collection, devoted to the reception of various miscellaneous valuables, which were not, however, as well protected as the good woman, by a pleasant fiction, seemed to think. For, though every bandbox had a carefully closed lid, not one among them had a bottom, owing to which cause the property within was merely, as it were, extinguished. The chest of drawers, having been originally made to stand upon the top of another chest, had a dwarfish, elfin look, alone, but in regard of its security it had a great advantage over the bandboxes, for as all the handles had been long ago pulled off, it was very difficult to get at its contents. This indeed was only to be done by one or two devices, either by tilting the whole structure forward until all the drawers fell out together, or by opening them singly with knives, like oysters. Mrs. Gamp stored all her household matters in a little cupboard by the fireplace, beginning below the surface, as in nature, with the coals, and mounting gradually upwards to the spirits, which, from motives of delicacy, she kept in a teapot. The chimney piece was ornamented with a small almanac, marked here and there in Mrs. Gamp's own hand with a memorandum of the date at which some lady was expected to fall due. It was also embellished with three profiles. 1, in colors, of Mrs. Gamp herself in early life. 1, in bronze, of a lady in feathers, supposed to be Mrs. Harris, as she appeared when dressed for a ball. And 1, in black, of Mr. Gamp, deceased. The last was a full length, in order that the likeness might be rendered more obvious and forcible by the introduction of the wooden leg. A pair of bellows, a pair of pattens, a toasting fork, a kettle, a pap boat, a spoon for the administration of medicine to the refractory, and lastly, Mrs. Gamp's umbrella, which as something of great price and rarity, was displayed with particular ostentation, completed the decorations of the chimney piece and adjacent wall. Towards these objects Mrs. Gamp raised her eyes in satisfaction, when she had arranged the tea board, and had concluded her arrangements for the reception of Betsy Prigg, even unto the setting forth of 2 pounds of Newcastle salmon, intensely pickled. There. Now drat you, Betsy, don't be long. Apostrophe said Mrs. Gamp, apostrophizing her absent friend. For I can't abear to wait, I do assure you. To whatever place I goes, I sticks to this one mortar, I'm easy pleased. It is but little as I wants, but I must have that little of the best, and to the minute when the clock strikes, else we do not part as I could wish, but barren malice in our arts. Apostrophe, her own preparations were of the best, for they comprehended a delicate new loaf, a plate of fresh butter, a basin of fine white sugar, and other arrangements on the same scale. Even the snuff with which she now refreshed herself was so choice in quality that she took a second pinch. There's the little bell ringing now, apostrophe said Mrs. Gamp, hurrying to the stairhead and looking over. Betsy Prigg, my why it's that there dissipant and sweetlepipes, I do believe. Apostrophe, yes, it's me, apostrophe said the barber in a faint voice. I've just come inches, apostrophe, you're always a comin' in, I think, apostrophe muttered Mrs. Gamp to herself, except when you're a goin' out. I ain't no patience with that man. Apostrophe, apostrophe, Mrs. Gamp, apostrophe said the barber. I say, Mrs. Gamp. Apostrophe, well, apostrophe cried Mrs. Gamp, impatiently, as she descended the stairs. What is it? Is the Thames a fire, and cooking its own fish, Mr. Sweetlepipes? Why, what's the man gone, and been a doin' of to himself? He's as white as chalk. Apostrophe, she added the latter clause of inquiry, when she got downstairs, and found him seated in the shaving chair, pale and disconsolate. You recollect, apostrophe said Paul. You recollect young apostrophe, not young Wilkins. Apostrophe, apostrophe, cried Mrs. Gamp. Don't say young Wilkins, whatever you do. If young Wilkins' wife is took, apostrophe, it isn't anybody's wife, apostrophe, exclaimed the little barber. Bailey, young Bailey. Apostrophe, apostrophe, why, what do you mean to say that shit's been a doin' of? Apostrophe, apostrophe, retorted Mrs. Gamp, sharply. Stuff and nonsense, Mrs. Sweetlepipes. Apostrophe, he hasn't been a doing anything. Apostrophe, apostrophe, exclaimed poor Paul, quite desperate. What do you catch me up so short for, when you see me put out to that extent, that I can hardly speak? He'll never do anything again. He's done for. He's killed. The first time I ever see that boy, apostrophe said Paul, I charged him too much for a red Paul. I asked him 3 halfpence for a penny one, because I was afraid he'd beat me down. But he didn't. And now he's dead. And if he was to crowd all the steam engines, and electric fluids that ever was, into this shop, and set them everyone to work their hardest, they couldn't square the account, though it's only a halfpenny. Apostrophe, apostrophe, Mr. Sweetlepipe turned aside to the towel, and wiped his eyes with it. And what a clever boy he was. Apostrophe, apostrophe, he said. What a surprising young chap he was. How he talked. And what a deal he knowed. Shaved in this very chair he was. Only for fun. It was all his fun. He was full of it. Ah! To think that he'll never be shaved in earnest. The birds might every one have died, and welcome, apostrophe cried the little barber, looking round him at the cages, and again applying to the towel, sooner than I'd have heard this news. Apostrophe, apostrophe, how did you ever come to hear it? Apostrophe, apostrophe, said Mrs. Gamp. Who told you? Apostrophe, I went out, apostrophe returned the little barber, into the city, to meet a sporting gent upon the stock exchange, that wanted a few slow pigeons to practice at, and when I'd done with him, I went to get a little drop of beer, and there I heard everybody a-talking about it. It's in the papers. Apostrophe, you are in a nice state of confusion, Mr. Sweetlepipes, you are. Apostrophe, apostrophe, said Mrs. Gamp, shaking her head. And my opinion is, as half a dozen and fresh young lively leeches on your temples, wouldn't be too much to clear your mind, which so I tell you. What were they a-talking on, and what was in the papers? Apostrophe, apostrophe, all about it. Apostrophe, apostrophe, cried the barber. What else do you suppose? Him and his master were upset on a journey, and he was carried to Salisbury, and was breathing his last, when the account came away. He never spoke afterwards. Not a single word. That's the worst of it to me, but that ain't all. His master can't be found. The other manager of their office in the city, Crimple, David Crimple, has gone off with the money, and is advertised for, with a reward, upon the walls. Mr. Montague, poor young Bailey's master, what a boy he was, is advertised for too. Some say he slipped off, to join his friend abroad. Some say he mayn't have got away yet, and they're looking for him high and low. Their office is a smash, a swindle altogether. But what's a life assurance office to a life? And what a life young Bailey's was. Apostrophe, apostrophe, he was born into a whale, apostrophe, said Mrs. Gamp, with philosophical coolness. And he lived in a whale, and he must take the consequences of such a situation. But don't you hear nothing of Mr. Chuzzlewit in all this? Apostrophe, apostrophe, no, apostrophe, said Paul, nothing to speak of. His name wasn't printed as one of the board, though some people say it was just going to be. Some believe he was took in, and some believe he was one of the takers in. But however that may be, they can't prove nothing against him. This morning he went up of his own accord afore the Lord Mayor, or some of them city bigwigs, and complained that he'd been swindled, and that these two persons had gone off and cheated him, and that he had just found out that Montague's name wasn't even Montague, but something else. And they do say that he looked like death, owing to his losses. But, Lord forgive me, apostrophe cried the barber, coming back again to the subject of his individual grief, what's his looks to me? He might have died and welcome, 50 times, and not been such a loss as Bailey. Apostrophe, apostrophe, at this juncture the little bell rang, and the deep voice of Mrs. Prick struck into the conversation. Oh, you're a-talking about it, are you? Apostrophe observed that lady. Well, I hope you've got it over, for I ain't interested in it myself. Apostrophe, my precious Betsy, apostrophe, said Mrs. Gamp, how late you are. Apostrophe, the worthy Mrs. Prigg replied, with some asperity, that if Perwer's people went off dead, when they was least expected, it warn't no fault of hern. Apostrophe, and further, that it was quite aggravation enough, to be made late, when one was dropping for one's tea, without hearing on it again. Apostrophe, Mrs. Gamp, deriving from this exhibition of repartee some clue to the state of Mrs. Prick's feelings, instantly conducted her upstairs, deeming that the sight of pickled salmon might work a softening change. But Betsy Prick expected pickled salmon. It was obvious that she did, For her first words, after glancing at the table, were, I know that she wouldn't have a cowcomer. Mrs. Gamp changed color and sat down upon the bedstead. Lord bless you, Betsy Prigg, your words is true. I quite forgot it. Mrs. Prigg, looking steadfastly at her friend, put her hand in her pocket, and with an air of surly triumph, drew forth either the oldest of lettuces or youngest of cabbages, but at any rate, a green vegetable of an expansive nature, and of such magnificent proportions, that she was obliged to shut it up like an umbrella, before she could pull it out. She also produced a handful of mustard and cress, a trifle of the herb called dandelion, three bunches of radishes, an onion rather larger than an average turnip, three substantial slices of beetroot, and a short pronger antler of celery, the whole of this garden stuff having been publicly exhibited, but a short time before, as a twopenny salad, and purchased by Mrs. Prigg on condition that the vendor could get it all into her pocket, which had been happily accomplished, in High Holborn, to the breathless interest of a hackney coach stand. And she laid so little stress on this surprising forethought, that she did not even smile, but returning her pocket into its accustomed sphere, merely recommended that these productions of nature should be sliced up, for immediate consumption, in plenty of vinegar. And don't go a drop in none of your snuff in it, said Mrs. Prigg. And gruel, barley water, apple tea, mutton broth, and that, it don't signify. It stimulates a patient. But I don't relish it myself. Why, Betsy Prigg. Cried Mrs. Gamp, how can you talk so? Why, ain't your patients, whatever their diseases is, always a sneezing their worry heads off, along of your snuff? Said Mrs. Prigg. And what if they are? Said Mrs. Gamp. Nothing if they are, said Mrs. Prigg. But don't deny it, Sarah. Who deniges of it? Mrs. Gamp inquired. Mrs. Prigg returned no answer. Who deniges of it, Betsy? Mrs. Gamp inquired again. Then Mrs. Gamp, by reversing the question, imparted a deeper and more awful character of solemnity to the same. Betsy, who deniges of it? It was the nearest possible approach to a very decided difference of opinion between these ladies, but Mrs. Prick's impatience for the meal being greater at the moment than her impatience of contradiction, she replied, for the present, nobody, if you don't, Sarah, and prepared herself for tea. For a quarrel can be taken up at any time, but a limited quantity of salmon cannot. Her toilet was simple. She had merely to chuck her bonnet and shawl upon the bed, give her hair two pulls, one upon the right side and one upon the left, as if she were ringing a couple of bells, and all was done. The tea was already made, Mrs. Gamp was not long over the salad, and they were soon at the height of their repast. The temper of both parties was improved, for the time being, by the enjoyments of the table. When the meal came to a termination, which it was pretty long in doing, and Mrs. Gamp, having cleared away, produced the teapot from the top shelf, simultaneously with a couple. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.